This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Float Chart with your boy.
My boy.
Matt Wolf and Joe Fit.
Hey.
Scotty Boy.
Scotty Boy is here today.
Did you know we've been recording that whole thing?
Yeah, I figured.
Okay.
It's okay. I have no shame anymore at this point. How many episodes are we in? No.
Put on pants.
I never wear those on podcast day. Jesus. Don't we have another awkward moment on this? Yeah, we'll just wait for that. You'll get to it in this podcast.
Do we have an awkward moment in this?
Yes.
I'm drawing a blank.
All right, well.
Oh, yes, I do remember now.
Don't give away anything.
It has nothing to do with nudity. No, that was a different podcast.
Was it?
Yes. You're getting your podcast wires crossed.
Oh, I totally am. This is the downfall of batching recording in a day.
Yeah.
Everything blends after a while. Now, today we have Scott Carson on the show, and this guy is one of our most avid listeners, so props to you on that one, Scotty Boy. I don't know if we're calling Scotty Boy, but it's going to stick.
He probably hates being called Scotty Boy.
Probably, but you know what? It's okay. I'll take that risk.
Today, we're talking about real estate again. We had Corey Boatwright on a few days ago or a few weeks ago. I don't know when the fuck these episodes come out anymore.
Jesus.
We had Corey on an episode recently at some time, and he was talking about real estate and buying multifamily homes and
leveraging wholesaling. Other people's money.
And today, we're talking about real estate from a different perspective. We're talking about note closing, which... Joe and I aren't really familiar with that world, and I'm not going to try to re-explain it to you because Scott does a great job of explaining what note closing is. But the other thing that Scott is really good at is he is an amazing marketer, and you'd never really see guys like him in the real estate world, but he's doing, you know, he's running Facebook ads, he's doing Facebook Lives, he's doing shit on YouTube, he's doing stuff on Instagram, he's freaking everywhere with his marketing, and he repurposes like a madman, and he breaks down his entire repurposing process, he breaks down his exact strategy for getting on as many podcasts as possible.
Freaking 100 shows in like a month or two.
Yeah, he booked like 100 shows like in like, I don't know, 30 days or something stupid like that.
He breaks that all down.
So he breaks that all down. So you're going to get like the first 50% of the show, we really dive into like his real estate strategies through note closing. And then the second 50% of the podcast is just like marketing wizardry of like repurposing all this content everywhere.
It's badass. And I would say that he's a better marketer than most like full-time professional quote-unquote marketers are. Dude just like has it dialed, so you'll love it. It's a lot of similar vein in what we like to talk about. He does a lot of traffic stuff and retargeting and all that stuff too. Very strategic people though. It's like just imagine like literally retargeting people who have money that want to invest in like it's so freaking ninja. It's so cool. So he's gonna break that all down. You'll love it, and his sound effects are amazing. Hopefully they'll grace this podcast regularly soon. He will give us a little sound effect toy.
That's
sounds
true.
Like I'm gonna hold him to that. But and just before we go over there, our traffic book is totally badass. People have been loving it, asking about it. It's been flying off the digital shelves and physical shelves. Yeah, Matt's holding it.
I
right
literally
now.
Just pulled one off my physical shelf. That's
literally.
Right. So it flew off.
It flew off
it
right
flew
in your
off.
Hand. Now, it's amazing. It's decked out with our specific strategies on how we do a lot of this traffic ninjury of showing up everywhere on multiple platforms.
It is your tactical playbook to be seen everywhere by your hottest prospects.
He read that from the first page. Good job, Matt.
I did. I actually didn't know that was the subtitle of this book until just now.
Shows how much I pay
attention. Well, the subtitle's not printed on the cover of the book. It's only on the first page of the book.
We got called out by Sean Vossler about that, too.
Did we?
Yes, we did. Publicly on Facebook. And he is completely accurate. You screwed up, actually. You made the cover, so I cannot be blamed for this.
Yeah, I made it with Snappa. If you go to evergreenprofits.com/Snappa, it's a really cool tool that we make book covers and shit in.
Matt, you're not supposed to pitch two things at once. I was going to say go to evergreenprofits.com/traffic book. All right, it's a competition. Who's going to get more traffic?
Evergreenprofits.com/traffic book hopefully gets more traffic.
Jesus. Well, you know where to go.
Yeah. Joe told me like before we started recording today that we need to say the URL of our shit like 10 times in the intro to make sure that you go to it. So that's why we keep saying evergreenprofits.com/traffic book.
It's just to annoy every podcast listener that we have here. I'm so very sorry, but come on.
Yeah, but they have that little button that says skip 30 seconds, and I guarantee most people do that through our banter in the beginning.
Our egos will not be hurt, but...
So thanks to the three people that listen to us banter at the beginning of every episode.
We love you so much more than the people that skipped.
And all of you people that are pressing that little skip ahead 30 seconds, screw all of you.
Well, hey, they aren't hearing it. They're not getting a free freaking book on how to do traffic at evergreenprofits.com/traffic book. It's free.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and listening to this intro and you know one of those assholes that skips the intros, tell them to go to evergreenprofits.com/traffic book.
And just give them a nice little love tap on the face, a little.
All right. I'm done being annoying. Let's go chat with Scott Carson about real estate and content marketing and repurposing and evergreenprofits.com/traffic book.
And yes, I really slapped my face.
evergreenprofits.com/traffic book.
Scott, how you doing, my man?
What is going on, fellas? You guys doing all right today?
We're doing all right. It's raining outside. I love it. I know most people don't like it, but in San Diego, you cherish it, you know? So,
you know, you can't have perfection every day out of the year there. Damn it. You know, a little rain, it makes you realize how much lucky you have it, you bastards.
That's true. Hey, Austin's like second best city, though. I love it out
it's
there.
It's actually been a...
I totally agree to that. If I didn't live in Austin, I'd want to live in San Diego for sure. But I love Austin, so.
Yeah. Austin's amazing. The stickiness, though, I go, eh. I don't know, the humidity.
It's not as bad unless you've lived in Houston before. Houston's like the armpit of the world. Austin's a little more humid than San Diego.
Yeah,
but just not a little. As bad as a craptacular Houston is.
Oh, man. Sorry, Houston, if you're listening, but oh well.
Well, San Diego's had a particularly rainy season. This is like the third time in like 6 months that it's rained.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's...
It's like global warming.
Yeah, I know, right? We'll blame it. So, man... Yeah, you do a lot, and I don't even know where to start, but...
Well, I know what your first question was going to be.
What was it going to be?
We talked about this before we hit record.
Oh, who's going to win the Super Bowl, Scott?
Oh, man, you got to go with the GOAT. Mm. Ah, you got to go with Brady. I mean, the guy, he's like the $6 million man, except the $6 billion man. I mean, I think the Patriots are going to win. It's hard to root against them, although it'd be nice to see somebody... knock him off, kind of the passing of the new torch to McVay. But it's hard to bet against the Patriots, man.
Yeah, that's true. I think if I was putting money on it, I don't think I'd put money against the Patriots, but who do I want to see win?
Right.
I want to see LA win. But I have different reasons than probably most people in the world. I have San Diego reasons I want to see LA win.
We want LA to be a Rams team, so the Chargers are just kind of squeezed out of LA and potentially back to San Diego. But that's a long shot, I'm sure.
All right, if LA wins, if the Rams win the Super Bowl, that means that the Rams are like LA's team and everybody will just say, fuck the Chargers even more. Sorry, we're not bitter about the Chargers leaving or anything.
Yeah.
You know, you got Ryan, you got, what's his name with his, what is this? Not quite growing with 12 kids or 7 kids.
Oh yeah. Philip Rivers.
Rivers.
Yes. Yeah.
His wife is actually due with their 9th kid God. Right now. So.
Oh, Jesus. Good thing he has money. All right. Yeah. Side tangent. I knew you're a sports dude, so we had to ask something there. And by the time this goes live, I'm sure people will be like, come on, idiots. It's the GOAT one.
Yeah. By the time this goes live, they'll already know who won the Super Bowl. So
yeah. All right, my man. So enough of that. What?
So what we should do is predictions, like score predictions. Who gets the closest?
This could get interesting.
Okay, so my prediction would be, so I would pick the Rams.
Uh-huh.
This is more based on emotion than fact.
100%.
But I would say the Rams 27-23.
Hmm. Okay. I still think Rams, just because it's more emotion. Yeah, I think it's going to be a little higher scoring. So 30-27. I don't even know if 30 is a good number to guess, but throwing it out there.
I'm going to go 30-24 Patriots. They score in the final 2 minutes after a tie game.
Shoot. I could see that happening too. All right. Time will tell.
Yeah. By the time this episode is released, everybody listening will already know the answer to that.
What are the odds?
And we would love for them to come back and comment on the episode and tell us how close we were.
There you go.
I like it. All right, cool. We'll leave it at that then.
All right. Yeah, moving along from the football topic, let's talk about your story a little bit. We know that you've got your note closer business. You do public speaking. You've been featured in all sorts of publications.
You podcast like a madman.
Podcaster. You do virtual summit type stuff. So before all this, what were you doing and how did you kind of evolve into what you're doing now?
That's a good question. So I grew up in a small town of Ingleside. I before I got into where I'm at now with being buying and selling distressed debt, I was a kind of a financial advisor, banker. I was in the finance industry for JP Morgan Chase for years and really enjoyed that aspect of it. But I kind of hit a glass ceiling where I wanted to go and where they wanted to put me. And I really didn't fit the corporate mold that well. So I met a couple guys that were teaching creative real estate investing and traveling the country. And so for 4 years, I got a chance to kind of hang out with these guys that were really teaching amazing things. You know, they were traveling around every 2 to 4 weeks and having a workshop. And I stepped into there. I started started a mortgage company with another buddy of mine. We were handling mortgages for their students. And about a year into it, the guy that was teaching me a lot of stuff, Bob Leonetti, partnered up with a little friend that we all know by the name of Roland Frazier.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for a couple of years, literally for like 2 years, 3 years, I don't remember exactly, bustle working for Bob, I got a chance to really spend a lot of time with Roland one-on-one, learn marketing, teach marketing, and, you know, helping real estate investors kind of get over the bug of getting outside of their 40-hour work week into really learning how to market. And this goes back, this was 2004 to 2008.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got to do that. And then when the market went south in 2008, I left the mortgage company and went out on my own and just started buying distressed debt. And, you know, between 2008, 2010, I lost almost everything because of what the market was doing. Cause I had a bunch of rentals and property here that I was fixing, flipping up in Austin. And I just got out of them. 2010, I literally sold everything I owned here in Austin, Texas, and decided I was going to travel the country for a while. I was going to go around the country, going to all the Major League Baseball parks. I planned out like this 27-week road trip.
Nice.
And literally, I had a garage sale 2 weeks in a row, sold everything except my truck and my dog at the time. I've been divorced. And literally, in that two-week period, I had like four real estate investment clubs that reached out to me that had seen some of the blogs and some of the deals that I was posting on Facebook on some of the note deals I had. And they asked me if I could come out and speak. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'd be glad to. I go, when do you want me to come speak? And all four of those dates landed on when I would have fictitiously been in that city for this road trip. So it was total, I believe, divine intervention, I think, kind of kicked in there. But, you know, my hair still stands up on my neck right now thinking about it. But that's what happened. So I, you know what, planned to be a 26-week road trip turned into literally 3.5+ years, me traveling across the country, speaking, teaching note investing, buying notes from banks. I mean, I spent a big chunk of time in Florida, literally for like 3 months, just driving up and down the coast, talking to bankers. And then I just started marketing. I used my phone. I've always been doing webinars since April 2011 and just sharing kind of what I learned and the good, the bad, the ugly. And I've always had a passion for this. I've always viewed it like if I did a video and one person watched it, that was one person more than would have seen it if I didn't do it. And just kind of grew my marketing from there. It looks like I do a lot of crazy things, but I'm really good at cross-pollinating and using something like, I'm a big believer of what I call the marketing octagon, where I can take one piece of content and redistribute it around 7 or 8 platforms.
We'll dig into that for sure, because you're talking our language when it comes to repurposing or remolding it for other platforms.
I really feel like on this episode, I want to kind of go in two different directions, and we can probably almost kind of split this into like two parts. I kind of want to talk about like the real estate and the note closing, because that's actually a concept that we're not that familiar with. So we have a genuine curiosity there on how that whole thing works. And then we also want to talk about a lot of your content marketing strategies, you know, your repurposing, your content octagon, the virtual summit type stuff you do, and kind of dive into some content marketing strategies. So maybe we could kind of have both those discussions, time permitting, on this episode.
Let's do it.
But let's start with the real estate thing. Can you explain what closing notes even means,
or what a note is,
or what a note is? Yeah,
yeah. No. Good question. Definitely good question there, Matt. So what I do is I buy distressed mortgages from banks and hedge funds. So like we went through a bit of a downturn 10 years ago, 2008, 2009, and 2010, where at the peak in 2010, there was 15 million homeowners that were underwater on their mortgage. They were either upside down or owed more than what it was worth.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't paying. We had, you know, record foreclosures, banks going out of business. And so you have banks and lending institutions that still to this day will sell off a non-performing residential commercial note at a huge discount off the current market value. The beauty about that is that I buy that debt at a big discount of what's owed. The borrower still owes it. But the fact that I'm picking these mortgages up, or these, you know, commercial notes mortgages up at 30, 40, 50 cents of as is value, that gives me a lot of flexibility then to reach back out to the homeowners or the property owner and say, hey, I'm now your bank. You're not going to pay ABC Bank or Nation or National City Bank or Bank of the Orient anymore. You're going to pay me now.
Mm-hmm.
But let's work on something here. Let's work on a win-win. I don't care that you were 2 years, 3 years, 4 years behind. I mean, I do. It helped me get a discount. Mm-hmm. But let's work on trying to keep you in the house. That's our biggest goal. And so many real estate investors, they love flip this house, or, you know, HGTV and the fictional shows they throw on there. You know, that's not real estate investing. It's all dramatized. But what I do, I buy this debt, and ultimately it's secured by the real estate. But my biggest goal is to rehab the borrower.
Mm-hmm. All right? Makes sense.
And so if we can get the borrower start paying on time again, or do a trial payment plan, or do some sort of loan modification and get them back on track, it's a huge return on investment to me.
Right. So you're basically taking the risk off the bank. You're putting that in your own shoulders. You have strategies, obviously. You got a big old discount, and then it's up to you to obviously get the money, but keep the person in the house ultimately.
Yeah, I wish we could do that every time, keep them in the house. You know, sometimes the borrowers just walk away. They leave the house vacant. Okay. Then we take the property back and then sell it, or you know, turn it into a rental or owner finance it.
Mm-hmm.
If they are going to pay, you know, play hardball once we foreclose about 40% of the time, which is unfortunate, because I'd rather have them stay in the house.
But, right.
You know, the 60% of the time, hey, we create a true win-win scenario. And, you know, I'll give you some easy numbers here. Let's say they owed $200 on their house, and their house is only worth $150 as it sits now.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably pick that mortgage up at like $75,000.
Wow.
And if their interest rate is like, say, it's 7%, well, if I bought it at basically almost 30 cents on the dollar of what's owed, and they have like a 6% interest rate, well, that means if I can get them to start paying on time again, that's like an 18, 19% yield to me immediately.
Hmm.
And it's not even considering, if they make payments on time for 12 months, now I'll recast the loan at 150, because that's what the property's worth, forgive $50,000 in debt to them, and sell that loan off at 80, 85 cents on the dollar of the one, you know, the 150 at one, you know, like at 120, 130. Well, I paid 75 for it. I just made another 40, 50 grand on the back end, plus the cash flow along the way.
Mm, so you really have kind of two sort of ways to make money off of this, right? You've got either consistent cash flow from the renter starting to pay up again, or not the renter, but
let's fix that. I want to clarify, not the renter, the actual homeowner.
Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I meant. Just wrong wording. Okay. The actual homeowner to get to start paying their mortgage again, that generates cash flow for you. If you can't get them to start paying their mortgage again, then you can actually go and either sell the house or sell the note again for more than what you paid for it.
That's correct. I mean, a lot of times we'll offer up cash to keys the homeowner. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that doesn't have a heart. I want to try to, you know, it works in my best interest to actually work with the homeowners. I don't like to foreclose,
right,
but we have to sometimes. But yeah, we'll do cash. There's like 10 different exit strategies once I buy a note. I can make money on it. So.
Interesting.
So it's actually, it's a fairly safe sort of investment strategy then, just because there are so many ways out of it.
Yeah, I don't like to use the word safe, but I like to say that it's whereas a lot of real estate investors, they get into something where it's like a 90-day, you know, they buy a property, they fix it and try to sell it in 90 days. Our deals take longer because we're obviously dealing with borrowers and foreclosure time frame. So our average time frame for a deal is like 12 to 18 months. But there's a couple of things. Like, I'm not having to send out like postcards or yellow letters or any type of direct mail pieces. Mm-hmm. I deal directly with the banks. And so over the last 10 years, I've built a large database of bankers and asset managers at investment companies. They literally send me lists every month, every quarter, that I can cherry pick from.
Mm. Yeah, they trust you. You have some reputation.
Yeah, there. So like one source for me will feed me on a monthly basis. Most real estate investors are chasing like foreclosures or you know, unoccupied assets. They're getting like one deal and they have to keep that big marketing machine going. Me, I just do an email blast every month to my asset managers and they send me updated lists. Okay, here's what we have available this month. And we'll go back and forth and go from there. So like, I'll give you an example. I got a listed to me 2 days ago, 128 mortgages. And out of the 128, 69 of them are performing. The seller is selling these off at 73 cents of what's owed, which is below the value. Mm-hmm. And we're going to end up probably taking down 64 of them. It's about a $1.5 million trade. But it's almost immediately throwing off roughly about a 20% yield on the cash flow.
Wow. Wow. Hmm. So is it required to buy in bulk like that, or could someone?
No.
Okay.
We do a lot with education, and a lot of our students are buying like two or three notes at a time, you know, 30, 50, 60 grand.
Got it.
You can buy one offs from, smaller regional firms. Don't call me and say, hey, Scott, can you buy my mortgage with Chase or Bank of America? Those guys buy, they sell large portfolios like 50 million. They flick me off their sleeve. They won't even talk to me.
Hmm. Sure.
Now, are you?
There's literally 4,000 plus other lending institutions and financial institutions that are originating loans that have bad debt.
Hmm.
I mean, we're still at about a 4% default rate in America. If you look at the 16 million homes that were either purchased or refinanced that year, that's still a lot of debt that's going to default. Plus, we still have about 2.5-3 million loans that are still left over from 10 years ago that are still, the borrowers are still upside down.
Hmm. Now, when you buy these notes, are you financing the notes, or are you going and buying them in cash?
You have to get cash. You can't get a loan from a bank to buy a non-performing loan. So
got it. Okay.
We 95% of what we do is raising capital from other people. People using their self-directed IRA accounts or cash, and then they'll come in and finance the purchase, and we'll do the workouts and either pay them, depending on what they're looking for, either a flat return, 6-8% on their money, or a percentage of the back end. Just depends on what the deal will look like and what they're looking for.
So that's we chatted with a buddy of ours, Corey Boatwright, the other week here on the podcast, and he does multifamily units, but does a very similar structure, self-direct IRAs, private equity. Yeah. And our private capital, that is. And it's, I was just like, oh, you don't even have to put a dollar out if you don't want to. You could just.
Yeah, I've known Corey for golly, going back. I knew Corey back over a decade now. Hmm. I think so. When he was big into short sales back in the day, when he kind of cut his teeth on before he got into wholesaling and some multifamily stuff. And
yeah,
Corey knows what we do. I mean, we've been doing it for a while. I mean, it's a much smaller niche versus wholesaling apartments, maybe 5,000, 10,000 total people that are doing what I do.
Wow.
In the industry. But the beautiful thing is that we're seeing deals 6 to 12 months before an investor like Corey seeing stuff now. And we're not having to deal with the homeowners on the, to buy it. We're just dealing strictly with the bank. So it's all about numbers and ROI and going from there.
Hmm. Got it. Now, so you obviously teach this stuff through your show. And did you say you actually have courses on it that you sell and things like that as well?
Yeah. I mean, I've been teaching since 2010, different workshops on it. And, 2010. Wow, I think back now. Yeah, 2010 was the first workshop I did. We just kind of threw it together. Had 25 people in a room, and it worked out pretty well. But yeah, I've been teaching. I was actually Educator of the Year a few years back in my note space. I was nominated this year also as an educator with another publication. So
very cool.
Yeah, I teach it, and that's kind of what we do is such a niche. That's why I had to start marketing my deals, because I had to get the word out what I was doing. And people are like, "Oh, this is interesting," but I think it's, are you flipping a property? So we just start teaching really to educate our audience. And that's how we raise a lot of capital. People are like, "Oh, okay. I don't want to do that much work. Can I just write you a check?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure. That's fine. Let's go that route." And if you want to get involved, great, get involved. And we'll show you all the ropes, the resources that we use and how we raise capital and who we reach out to, banks, and literally show people how to have assets sent to them, basically an autopilot.
Wow.
Or in turnkey.
So somebody that was interested in getting into the world of closing notes, and they come to you to learn how to do it. What's sort of the first direction you point them in? What's kind of the first step? Do I need to have a bunch of cash in the bank to get going?
No.
Do you tell people that they should go raise financing? How does somebody kind of get into this?
No, that's really good questions, Matt, because most people think they've got to have the capital lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. In real estate, any real estate investor will tell you that if you've got a good deal, you can raise capital for it. So the thing I tell people, and actually here, those that come into the game that have 200, 300 grand sitting on the sidelines, they're actually more of a handicap to their business long-term than those that get into the business with no money.
Hmm.
Those because that have their that money. Extra cash, they don't market. They're like, "Oh, I'm just going to use my own money. I don't want to market." And then they buy a few assets. Well, now their money's tied up in these assets and they're waiting for these deals to take 6 to 12 months to close out. They can't go buy anything versus somebody like me, who, when I got started, I didn't have a capital because it was a horrible market at the time. I had to raise it. and I was much hungrier, I had to learn how to market, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love so much about your guys' book and everything you guys are doing. It's I live and breathe that every day, because if you look at like Warren Buffett and Jamie Dimon and all these big wigs on Wall Street, if they're using other people's money to fund their big transactions, it's good enough for you if you need 25 to 50 grand to buy an individual note or property. And so we tell people, let's go online. There's a lot of videos out there. We've got about 1,000 plus different webinars and podcast episode videos and stuff like that for you to listen. Go through that, binge on that a little bit. And when you're ready for that, let's dive and start teaching you the nuts and bolts. And because we spend a big chunk of time showing people, okay, once you get the concept down, let's talk about how to market this. Mm-hmm. And when you get a deal, how to do some due diligence on it, how to market it effectively, what you need to say to kind of get that, you know, that bam out there to investors. Because everybody, I'm a big believer, everybody is either a buyer, a seller, or a funding source.
Hmm.
And so if you go into that with that mindset, and you go into the fact that you're not really in the real estate industry anymore, we're all in the media aspect of things. We all run our own media companies. You're in the note media company or the real estate media company now. With that in mindset, you'll be able to raise capital from just about anybody. I mean, there's $7 trillion in, you know, 401ks and IRAs sitting out there making less than like 1%.
Yeah.
You look at a lot of these like self-directed IRA companies, like we do a lot with Quest Trust in Houston. They've got $1.3 billion under management. And 34% of what they have under management is sitting in 0% accounts making nothing.
Wow. Wow. I remember Corey said that, and I think immediately we're like, holy shit, there's all this this money just sitting there, either not making, I didn't know if someone was just making nothing, obviously, but.
And you guys know that it's the 80-20 principle. Only about really 10% of people do anything. So a lot of people will roll, they'll take some classes, they get excited, they'll set up a self-directed IRA account, and they roll it over, but they're too scared to pull the trigger. They're too scared to do anything. So they've itch their itch by rolling it into something. Oh, I'm a real estate investor. Well, have you closed on a deal yet? No, but I have a self-directed IRA. Okay. Let's get it working for you. Let's have it make an above average return. Let's take your certificate of disappointment and put into something. Your 401k is now a 101k. Let's get it back to working for you.
Yeah, I like that.
So what do you think is like the biggest like roadblock hurdle that you see most commonly among your clients and the people you teach?
Overanalyze paralysis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like you see that. Huh? You guys see that all the time. This is a simple thing. Let's not make it more complicated. Unfortunately, common sense is not always common.
Right. That is very true too.
Yeah.
You know, look, if the numbers make sense, just market it. A lot of people get so bogged down and needing to know everything to take it apart. You know, take it apart, put it back together before they pull the trigger. And I'm the kind of like, hey, instead of ready, aim, fire, I'm fire, ready, aim.
A lot of times. So if someone's out there wanting to get started though, and so like I'm talking to myself here, so I, you know, we talked to Corey, and I'm sure some listeners here have listened to that episode, and then now we're hearing you. Is there a way that people can decide one or the other, maybe both, or why? What is that?
Yeah, seriously, go watch. I mean, there's so many different little niches to real estate investing. There's nothing wrong. If you find something that fits your personality, stick to it. The worst thing you can do is try to do everything.
Yes.
Or more than one or two things. Stick to one or two things. Make that what your focus is and stick to it. You'll be a lot successful. The biggest mistake I see real estate investors make, I'm sure Corey would agree with me on this, is people that go and they go to everything. They go to every workshop, every seminar, and they never pull the trigger. They're an educated idiot. That's like going to school to be a brain surgeon, but never operating on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So learn the craft, figure out what you like, what you dislike, ask questions of those that are closing deals, not people that closed on something 2 years ago, but ask people that are literally closing deals, ask them to show proof, and then make your decision and stick with it. And then pull out, and you know, we here in Texas like our guns, so we pull out the assault rifles and we kill those squirrels.
Nice sound effects.
True podcaster right there. Obviously, we're not that cool. We don't have any special effects yet. We'll see you at TNC.
Every once in a while, Joe might beatbox, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I told you, I'm going to bring you some of these.
So I'm like, it's going to change. Give us a month. No, that's really cool. And I think it's solid advice. I mean, that's marketing 101 too. You can get all these damn seminars out there, traffic and conversion, whatever Glazer Kennedy used to put out. We went to so many of these things. And yeah, there's all these seminar junkies that don't do shit. And you're like, go, just put an offer out there, run some traffic, test, you know?
Right. Well, here's the thing, and I might make a good transition to the other side. We get, like you said, there's so many different things, niches, and we want to do them all. I also teach the theory of unfinished bridges. Have you heard this theory?
Yes. Go on.
You're sitting on one side of the cliff and you're looking across at where you want to be, but there's this big cliff and cavern, and you look down this cavern and there's all this jagged edges and sticking up there to kill you that you fear. So we often start like building the bridge, like, I need a CRM. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start setting up like my MailChimp account or my Infusionsoft, but I'm only going to do a little bit of it. I'm going to get a half finished bridge. Oh, wait, I need to go work on my Instagram account. So I'm going to go work on my Instagram account. Oh, I need to set up a LinkedIn profile. So I'll start my LinkedIn profile. We half ass all these little things and we get frustrated because we never see any results from it. Mm-hmm. So I tell people, like, listen, learn one thing, learn it well, to get you across that bridge. I don't care if that bridge looks like a rickety rope ladder. At least you got it done. And the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. So when you finish one thing, then go back and start something else. When you finish that second thing, then go back and start a third thing. Don't start one thing. Oh, I'm going to start two, three, four. That's the theory of unfinished bridges.
Yeah, I love it. And it's a good visual that you're like, oh, yeah. Because, I mean, we all find ourselves with all this new shit to test and listen to these podcasts. You know, you get a billion ideas. Yep. But it's like, no, pick one that really resonates and go deep. Deep enough to get across that big old trench and, you know, and figure out what worked, what didn't.
Yeah, and you guys are experts at this. That's what I love about your guys' show is you do a lot of deep dives and you literally knock out the bridges and then you share it with your audience and share it with your tribe. That's the beauty thing. That's what I love about you guys.
Thank you, man. Yeah, that's what we're finding more and more. We're like, oh, yeah, we just like to experiment with a bunch of shit and then share our results and see if it's worth it or not for you guys to try it yourself. That's cool.
So when it comes to the marketing side of things, just kind of flipping over the conversation a little bit, what are you marketing in the real estate world? Are you marketing to raise capital, or are you marketing to find these deals? What is the marketing for? How does the marketing play into all of this?
Good question. It's a little bit different. So like what we do to find these deals is I spend a lot of time on like LinkedIn, reaching out to asset managers or secondary marketing managers, are the title of the people inside the banks that we deal with. So, you know, doing, connecting with them. Once I connect with them, we usually will track down their contact information, and then we just, you know, we drip market them once a month. Mm-hmm. They get an email that goes out like the first Tuesday, and then the following Thursday we send another email to those that didn't open the first round of emails, and those that open up, they get tagged, and then we just say, hey, what do you have on your books? You know, if we've got their contact information, we'll then take that contact list of emails that we've built and we'll upload it into Facebook as a custom audience as well. Mm. And market to them with a video like, hey, I sent you an email and reach out to you on LinkedIn. I'd love to see what you have on your books. What do you have that's got any hair on it that we can buy? And so that's a lot of what we do with the asset manager side. It's not sending out letters or direct mail or anything like that. It's literally all basically either email or LinkedIn or Facebook custom audiences.
It's so easy. I love it. I love what you said there. It's like strategic retargeting, in which we've done in the past too. You want to get the attention of someone? Be everywhere to them. Mm-hmm. Be on Facebook every time.
I have literally, I've sent an email, hey, do you want me to quit stalking you? Respond. And they're like, yes, please. Or I'm not the person. Or, you know, here's the person you need to speak to.
Ah, so there you go.
You know, and so literally I have 12 months. I have all of my emails out to my asset managers already written, already scheduled. We're going to rock and roll. So that way every week or every month, we should start getting lists in that will pop in and I can either sign a non-disclosure agreement with the bank or I get, you know, a spreadsheet. Now, once I get a spreadsheet, then we dive into the diligence and we find a deal. Then we take it to a different level. And I mentioned about the whole marketing octagon that we look at. We like to think of where we take one piece of content and repurpose it. So
yeah.
And in today's world, it's all a visual world. You know, when goldfish have longer attention spans than we do, you got to keep that in mind. So
such a scary stat.
It's very scary. Exactly.
Freaky.
And what we do is if we find a pitch, I'll give you an example. Like I have this deal on a property in Texas City that I own. I'm selling it tomorrow. So I've got a good picture from a realtor. We're going to take that picture and it's going to be our Instagram post. All right. Uh-huh. We're also going to do a quick little Facebook Live where I'll do a Zoom where I can do a Facebook Live where I can share the picture of the property. Say, hey, we got this great deal. Here's an asset. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath worth about 120. We're selling it for 60. You know, here's the details of it. If you'd like to give us a phone call, hey, boom, you know, reference asset 1234, whatever. It's a great deal. 3-2, it'll rent for $1,000 a month. We give all the details in that short little video, 2 to 5 minutes, nothing longer. We take that Facebook video, or the Facebook Live. And of course, we posted to YouTube, the second largest search engine. All right. Mm-hmm. But before we post it and make it go live, we transcribe that 2 to 5 minute video. We'll send the quick video to rev.com. So they transcribes it. They send it back usually in just a couple hours, if not like an hour. Mm-hmm. We upload that description into the transcription into the description along with our keywords in YouTube. Got a great little video on YouTube now. All right. Then we go over to LinkedIn, and instead of just we'll post a picture on LinkedIn, but then we'll also create a custom post on LinkedIn as well with a picture of the asset, the description, a quick description, SEO, like, hey, Texas City REO deal, you know, 30% ROI on a mod or something like that. We'll post that, and then we'll post either we'll put the link to the video that we just filmed from YouTube, and then we'll take the transcription for Rev, and that's our blog post in there. So we got a nice little blog article now. So then we'll share that to back to Facebook groups in different areas. We'll then also share it to Twitter with keywords, and we'll share it 3 or 4 times throughout the day on Twitter.
Wow.
So that's if we talk about that already. We did a Facebook Live. That's one. We did a YouTube video. That's 2. The Instagram post is 3. Twitter is 4. And LinkedIn is 5. Now, what we'll also do for 6, 7, or 8, we may take that and post that same article onto a meetup group in Texas City or into Houston to real estate investors in that neck of the woods. We'll jump over onto Bigger Pockets, which is a popular website for real estate investors as well, and post it on their marketplace as a deal. Or we'll post it, we'll go like the Facebook Marketplace and post that in Texas City Marketplace to drive investors or people to it as well. And then ultimately, we'll send an email out to our database that we have a ton of investors in Houston, and send an email to. But literally, we've taken basically one piece of content and repurposed it across 8, 9 different platforms. So while everybody thinks, oh, it's a different piece, like, no, it's like one video and one picture, and we just use the same thing over and we rinse and repeat it.
I love it. I'm assuming, is this like the 80-20, all these placements that you're doing from all the stuff you've tested? These are the most effective places that you've seen some action from?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I had a class in November, and I challenged my students. I said, here's what you do. So literally, I pulled this like crappy St. Petersburg, Tampa asset that looked pretty decent, numbers made sense. And I did a 2-minute Facebook Live video on camera in front of these students. And within 24 hours, I'm not joking, I had 35 people that wanted to fund that deal. And I literally just did the whole 8 octagon. Here's the 8 places. Here's where we sent it out to. And it literally, I had to turn it off, go delete it, because my emails were getting bombarded with so many people that wanted to fund the deal. I just put them into other deals.
This is so effective. I mean, you can just apply this to any way you're trying to get funding or close a deal or just sell your own damn house if you really want to.
So what is it?
I hate to say this because I have a lot of realtor friends, but I'm a big believer in the next 5 years, realtors and mortgage brokers, unfortunately, are not going to be needed anymore the way the market's going.
Yeah. So when you do get all these people reaching out, you post these deals and you get, let's say, 30 people all reach out saying they're interested. What's that intake process look like for you? What do you do with that?
So we have very easy. I got several VAs that will collect the information, whether their email, or we'll have them, hey, text the word deals to 72,000, and then that gets them into our database as well through Mobit, text messaging marketing as well too. So literally just collecting together, they go in our database. Hey, they're looking for stuff in Tampa. We just tag them that way. If we need to, a lot of times, then we'll just send an email blast out to people that are that are looking for deals in that specific state or live in that state as well. But we're always constantly looking because, some people get excited and other people, oh, I got my money tied up in other things. So it's constantly growing that audience and recycling. Because a lot of times people want to buy assets. Well, we may convert them to a funding source. Okay, you don't really want to buy that asset. How about you just fund the deal and we'll pay you a better return on investment than you would trying to do it all the work yourself.
Yeah. And what kind of investments is pretty typical? Like what's like the low end that somebody can invest and what's kind of a typical amount that you see?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, we prefer somebody to come to the table with at least 50 grand. So that gets them in 1 or 2 deals. I prefer them to be accredited investors, so we're making sure we're not violating the SEC laws, things like that. But there's ways for sophisticated people in. We don't like to take somebody's like last 50 grand. It's like, this is all the money I have. Like, then you're not a fit for us. Let's let's get you educated and teach you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 50 grand is a good kind of starting point. So we prefer 100, but we'll make exceptions depending on what they have. And there's a, you know, I'm the one that's handling talking to those investors. Like, here's a form. I need you to fill this out completely and send it back. Then we schedule a phone call with them, you know, talk with them, see what their background is, see if they're a fit. You know, and if my gut tells me anything bad, then I'm like, listen, I just don't think you're a fit. Thanks, but we're just not going to be a fit. You know, and you know, where's the money coming from? Is this, you know, savings? You got to provide statements. If this is from like a 0% interest credit card, no, you're not going to work with us. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, if it's rolled up in giant wads with sprinklings of cocaine on it.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, even though
you might need to go to Colorado or there in Northern California, Magic right. Mountain or something like that to get that working.
No, that's really cool. So the repurposing stuff, I mean, you have a team. I'm sure are there a lot of automations tools that you use to make sure all this stuff happens?
Yeah, I mean, I get a full-time marketer here in the office. We got several VAs that literally, once we do something, they post it to things. You know, I love paying $2 to $4 an hour. It's awesome.
Who doesn't?
But we use Buffer. I mean, Buffer is a big repurposing across the social media once we create content. And so I just literally, VAs are clicking the things. Shannon's putting it together. She schedules our Buffer here. And literally, so we're sending out content, you know, every day.
Yeah.
And then when we get assets sold, then we, you know, we go back and kill those assets or kill that, you know, that post so that we're not continuing to get, you know, I don't want anybody to complain that I'm bait and switching them. No, right. This asset was available for a while. Once we get it funded and need it, hey, great, we'll remove it. Those that have responded, hey, we've got a funding source. Do you want to go and back up on this, or do you want to get involved on the next deal and go from there?
Gotcha. Yeah. No, that's good. And we use, do we? No, we used to use Buffer, right?
Yeah, we haven't used Buffer in a while.
Yeah, it's a good tool, though. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, you have Buffer, Hootsuite. What's the other one that's really good? Is it Spark?
Repurpose.io is one we use.
Yeah, no, I love that.
That turns these podcasts into YouTube videos. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Which, segue, I was curious, how does the podcast fit in everything that you do?
That's a great question. So the podcast started, I was hesitant to start a podcast.
What? No.
Yeah, I know, right? You cannot see me on Facebook now. But, so I've been doing these webinars every Monday night since 2011. And when Facebook Live came around, I'm like, oh, what a great way to kind of touch base with my tribe every day. Mm-hmm. So I started doing like a Facebook, actually November 1st, 2016, I came in the office. I said, we're going to do Facebook Live every day. We're just going to share what's a day in the life of Scott Carson, what's going on in the WCN war room. Okay. And so we just did little, you know, 2 minute, 8 minute, 30 minute little Facebook Lives. Did it for 9 months. And a buddy of mine who now produces my podcast, he runs a company there in Southern California and does that. And that's basically what he does full time is producing and hosting podcasts. He's like, hey, man, you should really do a podcast. I'm like, no, man, I want to do all that work. I don't want to edit the audio. He's like, no, dude, if you're using Facebook Live or Zoom like we're using now, we can just take that audio file, that video file, and we'll do all the work for you. I'm like, I don't have to do anything except just speak and then upload the video to your platform and you'll do all the work. He's like, yeah. I'm like, done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so 9 months of Facebook Lives, and then on December or August 21st, 2017, we went live with the True Podcast. And now between the two of them, we've got 400 plus episodes, and we do the same thing. We always try to record a video, whether it's through Facebook Live or YouTube Live, through Zoom. Then we upload the file, and it goes to iTunes and all the other iHeartRadio and Spotify. And then when we get the they transcribe the audio, so they throw that on our website as a blog, and we put the video on YouTube and Vimeo as well. And then we create images, you know, for Instagram and thumbnails. And then we also create ego bait with our guests. We'll, you know, send a quote or a photo of them and send it to them so they can self, you know, share it. And then we'll take the actual, you know, transcription and use that as a blog article on LinkedIn as well too. So
I like what you just said there, that mastery. That's total freaking mastery. And I've seen your follow-up after we were on your show, the whole ego bait, like you said. You know, you have a little quote, got our image or whatever it is on there, combined with your show branding as well. What's that is that someone on your team, you know, one of the VAs just kind of churning out that process every time?
No, that's actually the production company that we hired. Like, we were like paying like $99 an episode is what it averages out to.
Wow. Okay.
But when you figure in transcription, editing, and then creating that ego bait in the thumbnails, it's cheaper than I could hire somebody in-house to do it, or a VA for the most part. So
yeah,
they handle it. I mean, when we're cranking out, you know, 3 to 5 episodes a week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier for them just to do it, you know, when I upload it, then, you know, the episode goes live 6 to 7 days later and all that stuff gets automatically emailed out to our guests like you guys and others. So right. I don't have to do hardly any work except just record and upload.
So $100 an episode gets the audio file edited, it gets you a transcription, and it gets you show notes?
A full transcription, not just show notes. Full transcription uploaded to our WordPress website. So they do that.
And show notes?
And, yeah, if you want to show notes, yeah, for sure.
For 90, that's a steal.
That is a steal.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's. They do it for about, I think, 300 other podcasters all across the country.
Yeah,
and then
that's cool.
They host it there. And then the thing that you guys may want to talk to anybody listen. They also have the ability to do evergreen ads.
What is that?
So they, since they're hosting, they created a software where they can plug and play different ads during podcast episodes.
Oh, so like dynamically changing ads inside the audio file. Yes,
as you would like it, called evergreen ads.
We love that even more. Yes.
That, like, so like an example, somebody goes and listens to episode 250, it doesn't hear a commercial for one of my vendors or sponsors from, you know, a year and a half ago. They hear something coming on me talking about January today, or the promo for January 2019, a new class that we're offering up for the year.
It's smart.
It's not stale information. It's all brand new content. And they just plug and play for me.
Man, podcasting is so crazy. Matt and I were always talking about it. It's so damn archaic, but it's slowly getting there. It's getting better. It is. Less radio-like. Yeah. And that's really cool. I was going to say something, but I'm drawing a blank now. I'm going to keep going down that vein.
We got to realize, too, and I think that's the thing. If you talk to, you look at everything, like when you guys were at Traffic Conversion last year, I think, and they had, was it Macy Marcy Smith from London, who was one of the keynote speakers on the last day, talking how Facebook is looking for characters for video. You got Hulu, Netflix, you know, YouTube Red. All these media channels are looking for video, and it's literally, you know, when you have YouTube, the second largest search engine, and then it's owned by Google, and then if you look at the top 100 websites, like iTunes isn't even the top 100.
That's true. Yeah.
And you know, and you look at Instagram, Facebook, those are all on there, and all that is visual media. And so while I love the audio side of things, and I think it's a great thing, I think a lot of podcasters that just put out an audio podcast, this is no offense to anybody, I think you're missing out on a huge chunk of the audience out there.
Mm-hmm. Man, don't tell us. No, actually, that is something.
I know, but one of these days you'll get on the boat.
Yeah, I know. You're totally right, though. And because that is the direction we are going after we get our studio and make a little, you know, setup. But yeah, the repurposing, all that stuff. And we've had Kurt Molly on the show, Facebook Ads Ninja, and he's always like, make more video, throw them in, test, just run a little bit of budget to it and just see where it shakes out. But you can use it everywhere.
Yeah.
Kurt's great. I knew Kurt back in the day. When I first moved to Austin 2001, I met Kurt trying to pitch me on a real estate deal back in the day.
Yeah, he was in real estate. That's right. Forgot about that.
Did a lot of short sales. I've known Kurt for a while. Great guy.
Yeah.
You know, the most interesting story is what his 800 day, banned from Facebook. It's a funny story.
He told the story on ours.
Yeah, he told the whole story on the episode with him. So,
so if you're listening to this episode, make sure you go back to that episode, the Kurt Malley episode, and listen to it. And make sure to share it and subscribe to a Hustle and Flowchart podcast.
Scott Carson is so much better at selling our show than we are.
Isn't that always the case? Isn't that how it works?
Always be closing.
With your podcast, what sort of benefits have you seen from the podcast, from like a business networking,
et cetera? Yeah, so it's been amazing. I mean, this is a little small niche. There was a couple of my students started a podcast like 2 years ago, and then they stopped it a year ago. And I was like, it's doing the worst thing you could is stopping, because you've got all this momentum. Now you're not doing it.
Yep.
And there's like me and then like one other gal that does like an episode like every 2 months or something like that. It's very niche-y aspect. So if you have a niche focus or niche flavor or something like that, it's a great way to get it all out. Cause people, I get emails every day. Hey, I listened to your show. I came across it. And I either, hey, I want to sign up for a class, or I would like to talk to you about investing some money with you. It's been crazy. And it's led to our sponsors that we have on, our vendors that we mention all the time. They've reached out to us, say, hey, we want to sponsor your show. I'm like, great. You know, pay me $1,000 or $1,500 a month, and we'll have you on once a month. and they see business from it. So they give us special discounts. We give that to our audience members, and then they see people signing up for things.
That's cool.
And so that's been the biggest thing. I mean, we just surpassed 230,000 downloads for 16 months.
Sweet.
But our videos though are at almost 400,000 downloads and views across Facebook and YouTube. But people listen, they consume the audio at like 86% clip rate versus like 11% for YouTube and like 1% for the Facebook lives. So the audio is where everybody's at. It's still where everybody's going to, but, we have a coaching program we do and I keep it small. November, we had a coaching, 7 students come in for coaching. 3 of them signed up because they found me on the podcast, and those 3 people each paid $15,000 each.
Wow. Dude, that's what we hear is podcasting, the medium. Yeah, the people who are listening typically have more money. They're more invested in you because they're spending this kind of this long period of time with just you and that person.
Well, the data says the people listening to podcasts have more money. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote an article on our site the other day where I dug into a whole bunch of data around podcasting, and we're actually writing a book right now.
That was a great article, man. That was awesome. I loved it.
Thank you. we're actually writing a book right now about podcasting, so I'm diving even deeper into all the data and stats because I really want to drive home the power of podcasting. Casting to people. And one of the stats that was really interesting to me was if you listen to podcasts, you're 40% more likely to make over $250,000 a year in personal income.
It's crazy.
Totally agree to that, man.
And that is just insane. And I don't know if it's, you know, people who listen to podcasts are more educated because they listen to podcasts or it's the other way around. But, you know, either way, wouldn't you want to be in that group?
I totally agree to it. So like I'm always constantly looking at like marketing trends and stuff like that. If you look at the wealthy or the people that are CEOs, CFOs, they're making like, you know, $75,000 or more a year. They spend most of their time on LinkedIn and Twitter and listen to podcasts. They're not spending their time on Facebook or YouTube.
Yeah,
that's I could see that. And yeah, Matt, you were talking and you're like, you think there's going to be a resurgence in Twitter.
We actually did an episode at the very end of 2018, kind of doing some predictions of what we think is coming in 2019. And one of my big predictions is we're going to see a resurgence of Twitter in like in the marketing world. Like a lot of marketers abandon Twitter, like, oh, Twitter's just a bunch of bots talking to bots. But I think because Instagram sort of reproved this concept of like hashtagging and at mentioning and getting these conversations going in this like short form way, I think that's going to translate and bounce back onto Twitter a little bit. We're going to start seeing people kind of getting it a little more with Twitter.
Oh, man, I totally agree to that. The fact that Twitter now allows you to put a short video on there, that's what saved their ass. They embraced the video side of things, and I think that's what helped them. I totally agree with that. Wasn't that the episode where you guys were sitting outside on your patios talking?
Probably.
Oh, that was the 100th episode.
That was back in my backyard.
No, this one was one that we did, I think, like it was released on New Year's Day, and it was like, here's our predictions for 2019.
See, I know Scott. Yeah, Scott's an avid listener. So. You're the man.
I am, man. I subscribe. I left you guys a 5-star review.
I know you did, yeah. Well, say that, and I know you're also a beast when it goes to going on other people's shows as well. What kind of results have you seen from doing that?
So my mindset was like, I've spoke a lot. I mean, there's been like, I'm on year 5 of at least flying like 50 times a year.
Wow.
All right. That's a lot of travel to go out and publicly speak.
That's more times per year than I drive. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah. Totally agree.
It's true.
I'm not exaggerating either.
Yeah. My commute to my house, my office, like 2 minutes. I could drive a golf cart to my office, but wow. I'm on travel. And that's what we do. It's a niche aspect. I'm speaking to real estate clubs.
Yeah.
So, and everybody in the real estate industry, with the prices going up and the values coming up, a lot of people that were looking for REOs or subject to deals, things like that, are getting squeezed. So I'm out communicating and sharing that message as I was traveling. Well, I look at all these real estate experts, and here's a tip that I do. If anybody's looking to get booked on more shows, here's what I've been doing. I think I shared this with you, Joe.
Yeah, you did. I didn't want to bring it up unless you did. So,
oh, no, I don't mind, because 95% of people aren't going to do it anyway.
True.
So I set a goal for myself. Like, listen, does it make sense for me to fly across the country to talk to 30 people, or would it make more sense for me to spend a little bit of time and just reach out to somebody who's a podcast that they've got, whether it's 500 followers or 1,000 followers? I can do it for my office here in my shorts and my workout clothes if I need to. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way I look at it. It gets out. It's me speaking. Same thing. Same results happen. People follow me. They sign up. They come to our workshops, whatever. It's the same way of building a following. So I was watching, I don't know, Sunday Night Football or something a couple months ago, right before the end of the year. I think November. And I'm just tooling around like, I like podcasts. And I wonder how many podcast hosts are out there. So I went into LinkedIn and I literally did a search, podcast hosts. And it pulled up like 369,000 podcast hosts. I'm like, holy shit. We're allowed to cuss, right?
Oh, yeah. You can say whatever the fuck you want.
Okay, fuck it. All right. So 369, like, huh? I wonder how many of these are real estate podcasts. So I typed in podcast host real estate and it pulled up like 17,000 people. I'm like, holy shit. So I was like, huh, I'm onto something here. So then I just literally, you know, I went and sent an invite to connect with like the first 100 as a test run. That was a Sunday night. Monday, I come to the office. I'm like, well, instead of me just connecting with them and sending an email, let me make this smart. So I went and recorded a short little 2-minute video. Hey, here's what I focus on. I listen to your show. Great show. Here's what I can offer. And I'd be glad to help market your podcast as well. And I did a short 2-minute video, uploaded it. And out of that 100 people, 40 people responded back by 5 o'clock and connected with me. Out of that 40, I went and sent a message, all 40 of them with a short little blip and then a link to that video. And within, and by the time 5 o'clock, I mean, I did it right before 7 o'clock because I have a webinar. By 8:30, when I got off my webinar, I went in my LinkedIn and I had 22 of those 40 had said, yes, we'd love to have you on the show. Here's a link to get signed up. By the next day, 34 of them total had responded. I'm like, that's what I need to do. That's marketing right there. So literally, I have a VA that's doing that. She's like, just do it to 100 people a day. Let's see what happens. And it's just, it's blossomed. I set a goal for myself to be on 100 podcasts for 2019. Mm-hmm. I've already booked 25 between now and March. To be honest, I have to increase my goal.
Damn it, man. We actually, I think our goal was, what, 30 for the year?
I think we said 20 for the year.
What are we at now? I think
we're already booked for 15.
Yeah, so we're trying to model you, man. Trying our best.
But nobody's doing it. You know Phoebe. I gave Phoebe a challenge. Phoebe moved to Austin, Texas here. And we had I started a podcast meetup in January. We had 12 people show up. And, you know, I said, let's do this to also entice people from Austin to come to the meetup group. So the group, I think, just looked a minute ago. It's like up to 80 people because we did the same exact thing. Hey, we're going to host a meetup. Come on out. And it's led to people getting trafficked in. So I challenged Phoebe and our group in 1st of January to get booked on 30 shows as my goal. I think she's at 20.
Nice.
That's the thing. There's so many people. And if you're doing a show on a regular basis more than once a month, you need that content. You guys know this, right? If you deliver really good content, hey, people love to have you on. It's a win-win, whether you're being a guest in each other's shows or you're just on one person's show and you can market that episode. You know, it's a real win-win out there. And I'm a big believer that podcasting is the last true, last bit of freedom of speech out there. You can say whatever you want without having to worry about Big Brother coming down on you.
No, that's a good point, man.
Unless you're Elon Musk. Because apparently everybody...
Oh, Elon. Yeah.
Elon Musk goes on a podcast, smokes a joint, and gets in trouble. So
yeah, but Elon's a perfect example of why this long form, you know, things like Joe Rogan, what we try to model for this for business is, you know, not have it all bite-sized, chunked out. But now, like in that example, you saw Elon fucking raw. Like he was like his raw Elon human, you know, and you're like, whoa, this guy looks like he's been through some shit, which he has. Yeah. And you don't see that in the interviews typically, you know, on ABC. No,
but that's what'll happen when you work 80 hours when everybody else is working 40.
100%. Yeah, I would never want that life.
But and 3 divorces later too, I think. But anyway.
Yeah. Side tangent, but long form, but
that's,
man.
I mean, that's a simple thing. It's free. I mean, you don't have to have the paid version of LinkedIn to do what we just talked about. It's just literally simply, and I just cracked up a guy in one Facebook group on podcast, like, man, I got a new show. I'm trying to get religious people on that are making a difference as a guest because I've run out of like my pastor and all his friends. And I said, well, just go do this. If you go to LinkedIn, there's like 9,000 have people that have religious or Christian podcasts.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I don't want to be on their show. I want them on mine. I'm like, idiot. Ask them to be on your show, jackass.
After you go and speak to their audience.
Come on now.
Hit a couple more, man. No, yeah. Bam. But going on other shows, I mean, we get so many. We almost get probably the same amount of emails as we do compared to the people that listen to us on our own show from other shows. It's just like, dude, I've heard you on Mike McAllowitz's Profit First podcast about X. And then now you see them trickling into all of our courses, buy our books. And it's such an easy way to just kickstart whatever the hell you're doing. And then you're cross-pollinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're already listening to podcasts. Bring them over to your show.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a big thing too. I look at, because we've been doing, that's one of the things we just say, let's leverage the media. Let's leverage it to work smarter, not so harder. So I'm not traveling as much this year. When I am traveling, it's either for me, because I'm going to a conference I want to go to, like to your guys' backyard for traffic conversion or social media marketing world later in March, or flying across to Orlando for PodFest you guys are speaking as well. And you know, I look at that. That's also like why I said, okay, let's leverage this. This is also why we do online events, you know, through Zoom. We do these online conferences that I don't have to rent a big hotel room or conference center, and we can bring people together,
yeah,
you know, experts like you and others for 3 days, 4 days of content, and open it up to the world and literally have a convention from my one office here.
Yeah, and you do it right. You know, we were on the podcast day that you did a few months back, and I was like, holy shit. I saw the spreadsheet behind the scenes, but just all the stuff you guys do out of your office on Zoom.
Did you go for 24 hours straight that day?
No, it was 12 hours on 12 hours. International Podcast Day.
Yeah.
On National Social Media Day, we went for 27 hours straight.
Ooh, oh, damn, man. How many copies?
And that was the big thing. Like, you know, I'm known in the world as for note investing in real estate, but I love the marketing side of things. So my friends, Christy and Elijah White from Serving Social, they got the city of Austin the year before to proclaim, what day is it? June 30th is National Social Media Day. And then they got Ryan Dice and the folks from Traffic and from Digital Marketer to also kind of sponsor it and run it at their event for 8 hours.
I'm
like, okay, great. Next year, I said, let's make it big. Let's do 27 hours straight from midnight East Coast to midnight on the West Coast. And we had 35 speakers, and we had speakers from 12 different countries that were celebrating social media days everywhere. But the most important thing, we had over 150,000 views in that 27-hour period.
There it is, man. There's so many cool things you could do here. I love this whole medium, podcasting, and just Zoom and all these live events.
Here's something I want to throw out to you guys, because I want you guys to be a part of this.
All right.
Here's a little note. So literally, I talked with the guy that does my production stuff. We are going to do an online podcasting convention. Don't know when it is, but you guys, I want you guys to be a part of it. And whether it's 2 days or 3 days, you guys don't have to fly anywhere. Stay at home. You can share your nuggets. You can be keynotes. I think if we bring on, you know, really good 30 to 40 people to really share some nuggets in podcasting and you know, video production, I think it would rock the podcasting world.
Yeah. Well, imagine after we release a book on podcasting at the end of next month, we'll have quite a few leads from people that are interested in learning about podcasting.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes. Hang on a second.
We'd be honored to, my man. Yeah, and then if you need help putting that together, let us know. You know, any ideas?
Oh yeah, dude. Trust me. I think it'd be good. I mean, I don't like to travel that much, and when you look at all the different things that are going on, I don't need to travel to another conference. What I'd rather do is sit at home in my underwear,
sure,
drink my drink, sleep in my own bed at night, and still learn the same content and go from there.
Oh yeah. My God.
Well, that's why I like everybody doing all their events in San Diego. I don't like it when people go do their events in Orlando, because who the fuck wants to go to Orlando?
Hey, have you never seen the Book of Mormon?
No, I actually haven't.
But...
I have not seen that.
Damn it, but I should. You were like the second person in a few days telling me that. Need to go see the damn thing. Yeah, Orlando. Well,
it could be worse. It could be like Ann Arbor, Michigan.
That's true.
That is true. No, right, Orlando's not the worst place in the world. No, I'm sorry, not. Orlando.
You guys got kids that you could like write it off, take it as a business trip, and take the kiddies at 3 o'clock to go to the parks and get half price tickets.
That's I'll tell you. So I've only been to Orlando once in my life, but it was in August. So that just kind of says everything I need to say about Orlando.
Matt, I hate
Ratland. Steph. She loves it. She worked there in college. And every time we go, I'm like, oh, you can go to the parks with your friends. I'm staying home. I don't want to get my shins busted up by 20 million strollers and overpriced crappy food. And it's the same music, you know. You
can't drink beer in the park, at least not in the California.
Disneyland, you can. I don't know about you.
For the most part. Not legally.
Exactly. There's a way.
We haven't taken it. I don't know why we take in so many 5-hour energy shots with us.
I don't know, honey.
That's a good idea.
It I'm is. Just thinking that a really good idea.
That's smart.
So waiting for one of you to get that.
Oh, man. All right, next time.
All right, one last little rabbit hole.
One last rabbit hole. Yeah, we noticed here on Wall Street Journal, Inc., all big publications. What are you doing over there, and how are you leveraging that for all of your other marketing here?
Well, first, I'm curious, how did you get connected with those publications and actually get that into those publications?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a couple stories to that. With Inc. magazine, I think you know Scott Duffy. Do you know?
No, the name sounds familiar, but I don't know.
He's friends with Roland Frazier. He was the keynote. He was one of the MCs at Traffic Conversion last year. So I've known.
Okay. That's probably Scott. How we recognize the name. Okay.
Yeah. Bald guy, likes to wear K-Swiss sneakers or whatever. But anyway. So Scott was working for Inc. magazine. He reached out to me and a bunch of others to do a video series. And you know, I paid some money to be a part of that. That was how I got into Inc. magazine a while back on their launch side they were doing. If you really want to get into a publication like Investor's Business Daily or Wall Street Journal, reach out to the people that are in your niche, like the real estate departments or the real estate article side. So that's how I originally got into Investor Business Daily. I just found out the person who was in charge of writing articles on real estate. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to him. I said, hey, I'm an expert in note investing. If you're talking about foreclosures and the market, I would love to contribute and provide some content. And I even sent over a couple articles that I pre-written. And she's like, do you mind if I use these articles? I'm like, hell no, go right ahead. So that's how we got in. That's how I got in Investor Business Daily. That's how I got in the Wall Street Journal.
When they use those articles,
people together,
you get the credit for them, right?
Quotes. And we just sent that all in and it worked out really well.
Yeah. So when you send those articles over and their writer uses them, are you getting the credit for them, or is the writer taking the credit for them?
I don't care. They're mentioning me in the article, that's all I give a rat's ass about.
Okay, so you make sure you're mentioned in the article, and then you let her publish it as her own.
Yep, exactly.
That's super cool, and you're making their lives easier. They're just like, oh shit, this is done for me, and it's legit, and it's what I talk about. All right, cool. I like it.
Yes, baby. Keep it simple, silly.
Yeah. Do you know Andrew O'Brien? He lives in your neck of the woods.
Andrew O'Brien. No, I can't say that I do.
Oh, he's right there in Austin too. He's a big old PR guy. And that's very similar to what he says. Yeah, and just make every, he's been on the podcast. So if you haven't listened to that one, you probably dig it.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably where I've heard it from. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Similar process, personal reach outs, just be really diligent or, you know, actually give value and don't be like copy paste to 100 different reporters.
Yeah, that's the thing. Give some original content, original story. Case studies work really well. I got some friends in Kansas City. They paid for a front page article on the Sunday morning news paper in Kansas City. It cost them like 10 grand. But to this day, they still get phone calls and it's like a year and a half later.
Wow. Wow. What were they offering? I'm just curious. Or maybe I missed it.
They were a real estate company talking about how they fix and flip properties. So Jesus Christ. Okay. Constructive. They talked to some before photos and afterwards talking about how the market was kind of coming back in Kansas City and what they were doing to really help the market out.
Yep.
So it was really kind of a great case study on, you know, people that were doing some good in the market up there versus Armando Montelongo from flipping his house in San Antonio. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Oh, that's great. No, PR is amazing. We're starting to dabble with it, you know, and just be very strategic. And like you said, it's the easiest to just start with blogs or different little very industry niche type publications out there. And more often than not, you're going to get a response freaking fast.
So one thing that you're going to do what I would recommend you do with your book that you have coming out too, is there's a website called e-releases that for like $700, you can write up a press release for like 700 words.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can include an image and then even a video. And you upload it to e-releases and they'll go out and find, you know, they'll upload it into PR and stuff like that. So we've done that a little bit of the time here with different announcements, like for our workshops or when we close on a big trade. And it gets, you know, we'll have 135, 170 different periodicals across the country pick up the article.
Wow. And they actually pan out. They're not just like stuffed and no one ever reads them on some page and, you know.
Yeah, like it had like Money Markets, Investor's Business Daily as well has picked up a few of our articles.
Yeah.
You know, Business Journal San Diego, Business Journal San Jose. you know, you have a lot of different, you know, because a lot of these companies out there with their online websites or they're also their periodicals, they're looking for content. Mm-hmm. They want somebody to help them provide them. If it's written well, it's precise, you got a hook in there, and they'll often run with it. And it's paid off well for us.
Nice. Yeah.
So do you actually see a good amount of traffic coming from doing press releases?
They make up for more than what we paid for them. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little harder to tell because then what we do see, I'll tell you this, what I do see is I do see a momentary blip in downloads like 2 days later on our podcast.
Hmm. Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, man. I mean,
I see blips where, you know, we'll run in about 1,000, somewhere between 700 and 1,000 a day. Well, suddenly we'll have a blip of like 6,000 downloads in a day or 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, okay, great. It, you know, it hit perfectly. You know, it's the episode that we mentioned in the article we put a link to, and that, you know, that drives it. Same thing. We'll, if it's a video, we see a increase in that YouTube video for the day. That's kind of how we track a lot of that stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, we try to make sure that the video that we're uploading has something that's strategic, you know, to lead them back to our website or for coaching or, you know, deals we're closing on, something like that.
Got it. Man, there's so many cool things that you're just constantly experimenting. I love it that you're in that space, but you're just doing all this stuff that probably that niche over there, they just have no clue what the hell you're doing because you're like everywhere. Like, what the fuck is Scott doing? Yeah,
and that's the thing is I kind of run a marketing calendar here. I'm always constantly talking with Shannon and my VAs.
Yeah.
Shannon's is our marketing person here in the office. And, you know, we have a 12-month calendar and she's constantly putting things and creating, you know, like little simple things like, oh, it's National Margarita Day. So she creates an image in Canva and throws it up there. But then we'll go find something stupid or we'll talk about it in the podcast. And then, you know, once a week, we do something big. So 4 or 5 times a month, we're doing something like a press release once a month. And then we're also doing, you know, other things. You know, we're sending an article out to somebody in different periodicals as well to try to get out there. They don't always work, but the only thing you guarantee by not doing it is failure.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Oh, man, I think we covered a lot. I'm looking at our board. I'm like, is there anything rabbit holes? But I think,
no, I think,
we're good, man.
if anything comes up, I'm sure you'd be up for a round two.
Dude, always, man.
Yeah.
Always.
Even in person, since we'll be hanging out. We'll be hanging out together at Traffic and Conversion and PodFest and maybe Podcast Movement. And
yeah, definitely. Well, that's the thing is, you might want to reach out to Chris at PodFest. He's got some extra space the day before, maybe I'm going to do a half day, like lunch and learn out there in Orlando for real estate investors.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll write that down. I've been talking to Chris. He's a super cool dude. We had a long phone call.
Awesome guy. I mean, just absolutely. I can't wait till we roast him at PodFest some year.
This will be our first toast. We're going in blind.
Only DeMoss this year. So.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll figure something out. We'll try to get there the first day.
We've actually never gone to any conferences that are related to podcasting. I mean, New Media Summit was like the closest one, and that was really not about being a podcaster. That was about getting on podcasts. So we've never really done any of these conferences related to podcasting, and this is the first year that we decided, you know what, let's start entrenching ourselves in that world. You know, we've kind of sort of built a brand for ourselves in the, you know, the digital marketing world, traffic strategies, content marketing, that sort of thing, but we haven't really built any sort of brand among podcasters yet. So that's kind of like this new avenue that we're trying to like cast under our net is podcasters. So we're starting to get to all these podcasting related events now too.
That's good. Mm-hmm. You're going to love it. I went for the first time last year and it's really a warm, and they'll have 1,000 people, but it's literally like going to your local meetup group. It's just a great, great group. And nice. Matt, if I can throw something out there, make sure you recharge your batteries, buddy. All right. Make sure you know, we want you to be healthy there too. Cause I know you get excited and things like that, but make sure you recharge your batteries. Okay.
Well, here's the problem. Like at New Media Summit, I remember we like made a very clear effort to not go down to the bar and stay out late. But what do we freaking do? Oh yeah, back in the hotel room, we're just like chatting about all these random ideas. And
yeah, we
like 1 a.m. Like
we stayed good to our promise of not hanging out in the bars and getting trashed every night. We didn't stay good to our promise of actually going to sleep when we went to the hotel room. We were just like sharing ideas and talking about business strategies. And next thing you know, it's like, oh fuck, it's 2:00.
Can't
we
should go. Shut us up.
But, well, tell you what, if you need something at PodFest, you let me know. I'll have my I've got some staff out in Orlando who could make a run to the Publix for you, whatever you need. If it's a Red Bull or whatever, man.
Love it. See, it's a true podcast friend. Just true friend in general.
That's right, baby.
All right, Scott. What's a good book that you reference often that you'd recommend to the listeners here?
Oh my gosh. I just gave like three copies of this away today. It's Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill and Sharon Lecter.
Mm-hmm. Why do you like that one?
Well, I love it. It was written actually in 1938 by Napoleon Hill, who's the author of Think and Grow Rich. And in the book, it's him having a conversation with the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife wouldn't let him publish it in 1938 because that was a little bit of a controversial topic. But now, you know, fast forward 70 years, Don Green, the CEO of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, came across this manuscript and gave it to Sharon Lecter, who's the co-author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at the manuscript and got it published, but she didn't change anything to it. She just added her thoughts of what Napoleon Hill would think in today's society. And the book basically talks about how, okay, hey, he's talking to the devil, and what makes the devil so successful? He goes, well, what makes it successful is I put distractions in front of entrepreneurs. I put distractions in front of people. I make them drift.
Mm.
You know, those mm-hmm. people that are successful are the ones that can avoid the most amount of drifting in their life. Their focus, they keep going forward. They avoid the distractions. They get stuff done. Those are the people that I can't stand. But those that I'm very successful with are the ones that are trying to do everything, and I keep them confused, and they don't have any positive impact on the world because they're too busy chasing their own tail. And that book has always stuck to me because the fact is, that's one of the big things. Like, I get bombarded every day with people wanting to do different real estate deals with me on, mm-hmm. on different types. You know, and I'm like, no, if it's not a note deal, not interested. I mean, and it's how I've built my success, is just being focused on the same thing with podcasts. I'm going to mm-hmm. stick to this one podcast. I'm going to stick to this exactly what I'm going to do. And that's the thing that I see with entrepreneurs out there. We've talked about this beforehand. So many people running around, they don't have any success. They get frustrated and they go back to a job or they give up. Kill the squirrels, stop, try to avoid drifting as best as possible, and you'll find a lot more success and ultimately happiness and wealth because you're focused. And that's what I love about that book. It's Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill and Sharon Lecter. You read it, it will be one of your top three or four books for your life.
Alrighty, I need to get that tonight. Yeah, it's just like that bridge analogy you said earlier. It's the drift, minimize drift, eliminate it as love much it. As possible. All right, Scott, where can folks find you? I know you have a lot going on, so I'll let you kind of take this.
Really easy. If you just go to weclosenotes.com, that's weclosenotes.com. That's my website. You'll find everything that we do on there. I'm on social, you know, all the social medias, but just weclosenotes.com, or just look for @1 Scott Carson, and you'll be able to find me.
Badass.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, man. This has been super cool. Can't wait to see you in a month at TNC.
I know, man. Beers on I'm excited us. For it. Yeah, literally. Yeah. And if you're listening to this, the date against of Joe's and Matt's big fun party is Tuesday the 26th at what brewery again, guys?
It's at Mission Brewery in downtown San Diego. Dude, you're good. We got to hire you. Yeah. Our pitch man.
Remind us to actually give calls parties, to action.
Mm-hmm. You know, graduations of bar mitzvahs.
Perfect. We can make that work. All right, Scott. We'll see you soon, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Y'all take care. Have a great, great week. And we'll see you in a couple weeks.
You too. All right. Thank you. And I hope you just enjoyed this episode you just listened to. Now, right now, before we sign off, I have a few things I would love for you to do. So the very first thing is to go find our guest on Facebook and tell them that you loved their episode with us. That's going to help them just feel good about themselves, but also it's going to spread the word a little bit more for us. So go find them on Facebook. Everybody's on Facebook, and go say that you love their episode and maybe one cool thing that you learned there. The second thing is to go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. Just look up Hustle and Flowchart and hit the subscribe button. And the very last thing, the third thing, is to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast and help us spread the word more. That's how more people are going to get this awesome knowledge, this cool podcast training, and a whole bunch of other cool free training that we give out at evergreenprofits.com. So that's about it. Go find them on Facebook, go subscribe on iTunes, and leave us a review. You would be amazing if you did that, but you're always amazing. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.